Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd. I just stepped off the Meet the Press set. Today, I interviewed Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat from Connecticut, former Texas Congressman Will Hurd, who is mulling a bid for the Republican presidential nomination. He was a Republican member of Congress for three terms from South Texas. This week, we delved into the Republican Party's paralysis when it comes to dealing with Donald Trump. Despite Trump being recently found liable for battery and defamation in a civil rape trial, would-be Republican rivals are still stuck between a rock and a hard place. They want to present the alternative that party-wide polling seems to indicate could be popular, but are weary of alienating Donald Trump's current and extremely motivated base of supporters. Russell Moore, editor-in-chief of Christianity Today, also helped me break down the morality question brewing inside the GOP these days. Despite continued moral transgressions, not to mention legal troubles, Mr. Trump remains highly popular among evangelical voters as he looks to take back the highest elective office in the land. So joining me to unpack today's show a little bit, and talk about one aspect that we didn't talk about on the show today, and that is the town hall itself that was put on by CNN. It's Kimberly Atkins Storr. She's a senior opinion writer for the Boston Globe and was a great member of the panel today. Kimberly.
Hi, Chuck.
Happy Mother's Day, by the way.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
I want to start with what people may not realize is that you have a law degree. You're a recovering lawyer or recovering practicing lawyer, right? Isn't that?
Yes.
And I want to start with a question that Chris Murphy and I, a conversation we had off camera, and we didn't fully get to it. And it was sort of on the issue of guns and the most recent ruling in Virginia where a federal judge said because of the Supreme Court ruling when it came to handgun restrictions in New York State that no longer could a federal government, you know, to anybody under the age of 21 be limited in their ability to get access to a handgun. And it goes to this issue, which is if you believe there needs to be regulation of guns, do you focus your energy on changing the legal interpretation of the Second Amendment that has clearly gone through a radical change over the last 20 years from the rights perspective? Or do you actually try to change the Constitution? And I asked him that, and he admitted to me that he doesn't know what the right answer is, but that he's thought about both.
Yeah, I think he's absolutely right. I mean, the problem with this that's so different with other issues is because the Supreme Court has ruled the way that it has, and it indicates it will continue to expand the constitutional gun right as far as possible. You're seeing efforts like this, states when they, even when they do try to thread that needle and pass gun laws with previous Supreme Court cases in mind, you're seeing these laws be struck down again and again, just spurring new appeals, which go back up to the Supreme Court, which expands the Second Amendment even more. So I'm not sure that lawmakers can legislate their way out of this so long, you know, as this most recent opinion in Bruin, which expanded that individual gun right outside the home. I think measures beyond background checks that are passed to try to stem this violence are just going to be doomed in the courts. I think aside from amending the Constitution, I don't know what other solution there is.
On the pro-life side of the political debate 30 years ago, they decided, well, we're not going to win this argument in the public. Let's see if we can win it in the courts. This is a case where on the gun regulation side, the public is with them, but the courts aren't. You know, is this become a judicial litmus test? The way it was on the right, should it become one on the left?
For a long time, the left has done a terrible job at explaining the judicial system and the courts and why they're so important and why they are a political issue in the way that the right has always done. I think what this is going to do, the disconnect between the public and the way the court is ruling, I think the biggest problem is for the court. It just continues to chip away at the legitimacy of the court. And what you end up then is a big population of people who don't abide by or believe in, not necessarily abide by, but don't believe in what the court is doing and don't see them as a proper authority. And that's a big problem for Roberts.
They really look like political actors now.
They really do. They really do. And that really undermines the rule of law in a way that is really, really problematic. I mean, in the recent history, you had the court considering public opinion in the rulings. They don't have to. That's not a factor in their ruling. But with the same-sex marriage decision, for example, you know, Justice Kennedy spent a great deal of time talking about the way society has changed and the way they accept marriages that come in all forms. And that's important to the legitimacy of that opinion, and that's slipping away.
I want to take a step back about this week because, you know, there's a lot of specifics that happened this week. We've got this, you know, you got the Title 42 issue, you got the debt ceiling. We have the Donald Trump civil suit. We had the spectacle of that town hall. What did you learn this week about 2024, or did you learn anything?
Well, I learned a couple things. I've learned that Donald Trump has not changed. He is going to continue to campaign and act and be the same person that we've seen him be over the past 6 weeks. I've also learned that, you know, the folks in the media still are struggling to try to figure out the right way to cover him. I don't think he should be deplatformed, but I also think that putting him on television with a bunch of supporters behind him is a bad idea. And that doesn't, if it's a town hall.
You think it's bad if media or organizations throw rallies for him?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that is bad. I mean, what were we supposed to learn from that fact? I think that should always be front of mind. If we know we're not going to learn anything by having supporters backing Donald Trump, that it's only going to serve to give him, you know, in-kind political donations, right, that we shouldn't do that. So there's still a learning curve happening there. But what I'm waiting to see is what the other Republican primary opponents have learned, because they don't seem to know exactly how to campaign against him. There still seems to be some wariness there, or allowing other people to take the heat and just trying to ignore him. And I don't think that that's the best way either.
You know, what's frustrating to me is I don't feel like anybody's just running the way they want to run. Feels like everybody's got an angle. Everybody's got to tell, you know, so Pence is trying this and DeSantis is trying that. And, you know, Nikki Haley's trying this and Asa Hutchinson's trying. You're like, is anybody just, you know, this is who they are, you know?
No.
And I don't know if I fully, you know, I don't know if people are truly just being who they are here,
yeah,
or trying to be, or just trying to, you know, it is. And I think that people are tied into knots on their own own identities.
I think that that is absolutely right. I think that's part a factor of Donald Trump. It's part a factor that this is already becoming a really big primary field, and people are just trying to figure out where they fit in that pack as they're coming out of the gate. And there's also a fear of being, like, you know, an early front runner and getting hot and then suddenly falling off. I mean, we talked about that a little bit on the show. I was thinking about, you know, nobody wants to be Scott Walker this time around, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what DeSantis is afraid of. They come out hot, they're sort of declared a front runner, and very quickly they're completely kicked out of the running. I think that's a part of it. And I think also people saw the way Donald Trump campaigned in the primary in 2016, and right, they don't want that smoke. And so some of them are allowing other people, you know, Pence has been mildly critical, Chris Christie has been very critical, and they're happy to let them take the fire and sort of duck and cover and try a different approach. I'm not sure that that will be helpful either, but nobody wants to alienate Trump's base, and that's a tough place to be.
Everybody in that party thinks it's somebody else's job. Mitch McConnell chose not to convict him and said that the law enforcement community would do it, while the law enforcement community is acting and his party isn't respecting that. Like, I mean, right, it is interesting to me that there are Republicans who believe Donald Trump should be dealt with and are hoping somebody else deals with it. Nobody wants to take responsibility for this themselves.
No, not so far. There doesn't seem to be any appetite for that at all.
So to me, the big lesson I took from the media, you and I joked about this off camera, is if Donald Trump is part of your business plan as a media organization, you probably need a new business plan. I mean, look at Fox's defamation and what happened to CNN. Like, both of them were trying to use Trump as a business plan, right? As a marketing plan. And you're just like, it's like being the frog that gives the scorpion the ride across the pond. And then you get stung. What'd you expect?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Look, media organizations are businesses like other businesses, and they do have to think about their bottom line, but that should never, ever drive their coverage, their editorial decisions. And I mean, Fox was a extreme example.
It's a billion-dollar mistake that they
made. But I think the misstep by CNN is showing that other media organizations, to some extent, can also fall prey to that. You have to keep the coverage with the audience in mind and what you can learn at the center of that. And when you go away from that, that's when you run into trouble.
Look, the fact of the matter is, I do think there have been too many media organizations that have been clutching, you know, been a little pearl clutchy and like, oh, we have to deplatform Trump. Like, that is a mistake. You got to deal, you cannot sweep Donald Trump under a rug. You cannot hope he's banned from Twitter and Facebook. I think the mistake people have made is trying to protect the public from Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, the public has to decide if they want that or not, and they should get as much of exposure to the unfiltered version of him as you responsibly can show.
I think that that's true. Like I said, I don't think deplatforming him is ever a solution in this, but you also have to give proper context. You also have to tell the full story of what's happening. And that includes the charges that he's facing. That includes other legal peril. You have to cover him completely and with context. It's not always easy to do in every situation. You make the best decisions that you can. But I think it's pretty glaring when we see where the mistakes are made.
So, into this, Biden's going to have a terrible summer. The question is it really bad or is it just status quo bad? Or am I being too jaded and cynical? Is there a positive moment out of this summer for him?
I don't think we know for sure whether he's going to have a good or bad summer. And I think some of it is based on bigger issues like the debt ceiling. If that goes left and we see the market start to take a hit, that's really bad. It depends on what we see happen at the border after the expiration of Title 42. But if those things do not end in catastrophes, if he can govern and show that he's governing, especially while Donald Trump is perhaps being indicted in Georgia or elsewhere, I it could actually be a very good summer for Joe Biden. We'll have to see.
Yeah, I think I guess the way I look at it is he's not in charge of events.
Right.
That's part of the problem, right? He is sort of events have been forced upon him. You know, he doesn't want this debt ceiling fight, but the Republicans are forcing the fight.
Right.
Immigration, he has, despite being able to say he introduced a bill on day one, he has done nothing since. They know this issue only divides their party, and they're not convinced swing voters vote on it. They know swing voters are concerned about it, but they're not convinced they vote on it. I think we're about to test that premise.
Yeah. And I think it also depends on who these swing voters are, right? Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we spend a little bit too much time thinking about, oh, who are these voters who are looking at Trump, but who are considering others and might consider Biden? I think that's a shrinking and shrinking population. I think what Joe Biden really needs to do is remember who elected him and really focus on policies and messaging that is aimed at younger people, that is aimed at, that is future looking, right? Not just cleaning up the messes that exist right now, but that are future looking and hopeful and are progressive with the small p. I don't mean in terms of the politics of it. And that's where his swing voters are, because they are choosing between either voting for him or staying home. Mm-hmm. And he has to keep those people engaged through the long haul through November 2024 in order to be in a strong position.
Well, you know, he went to Howard yesterday to give the commencement. And there was inevitably a lot of the conversation was, oh, young African-Americans are not that enthusiastic about Joe Biden. Here, even these students, you know, Biden's strength has never been about Biden. Biden's strength has always been in who he's not.
Well, I think so to a certain extent. I mean, I think, you know, the action that he did or attempted to do with things like student debt was responsive to the people like those in the audience there at Howard who want him to enact policies that make their lives better. And I think he does, when he's in his element, have the ability to speak to that, even if he can't take actions that the court will let stand. He has that ability to speak to that. And I think he needs to do more of that and really showing how he is an alternative to Trump and others than just saying it. I think that's where the turn has to be made. And I think, you know, people like that understand what the stakes are. They know what the stakes are. They just need to be convinced to do something about it, to cast that vote. And I think when Joe Biden is in his element, he can do that. It's just a matter of Willie.
As I transition to a little lighter topic here, I'm not going to name check who on the panel, but we were having an off-camera conversation where Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s presidential candidacy was compared to Conor Roy, the oldest child of in succession running for president. First of all, are you caught up on Succession enough where that made you laugh?
Yes, that I laughed pretty heartily at that comparison. Yes,
it wasn't a bad one. I mean, look, Bobby Jr. And I'm curious about this, where your head is on this, he is, for those of us that have been covering politics for the last 30 years, Bobby Kennedy Jr. has been sort of an activist who uses his famous name, used to be for the environment. Now he dabbles in sort of some fringy anti-vax stuff, and he is sort of out there in a way that the rest of the Kennedy family, they don't denounce him, but they don't stand next to him. It's an interesting relationship. At what point do you think, you know, there's this fine line between covering Kennedy's candidacy, it's not that serious, but his famous name gets him a little more support, probably from people who don't realize how kind of kooky his views are.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it's going to be. Look, I write for the Boston Globe, and so we have an audience who is very familiar with the Kennedys. And if we are not feeling any clamor for this candidacy, I'm not sure beyond New England how that's going to go. I also think every family has someone who disagrees with them and does it in their own
way. This one just happens to have the most famous name.
Exactly.
of the bunch that's living.
Exactly. And so I everybody has a right to launch a candidacy if they want to, but I am just very unsure of who his constituency is.
Are you surprised that there isn't an ambitious Democrat like that's from the semi-respectable wing of the party that isn't giving this a shot?
No, it's very difficult to primary a sitting president. That's very difficult. I think what we're seeing is a lot.
Oh, I agree. There is, but there's never been more opportunities to get attention, and there's a lot of attention-starved people out there. That's why I'm semi-surprised.
Yeah. I mean, that's true, but I think they're keeping their powder dry for the next election.
How do you think the vacuum gets filled if we end up with Biden versus Trump, that there is this vacuum of third party? Or do you think it's sort of, we realize there's no individual? I'm a believer that, look, Perot had charisma. Whatever you thought of him, he had a charisma to him. Mm-hmm. You kind of need, and I don't know who that candidate is that sits out there. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger is the closest thing, and he's not eligible for president, although I think you could test the constitutional premise of that, but he's not. But he accepts the premise that he's not eligible.
Yeah.
I don't know of anybody else that fits that category that could truly sort of break through the way Perot broke through in 92 or the way, I guess, Teddy Roosevelt broke through in 1912.
Yeah. Listen, I think there is that vacuum. But at the same time, I think that the stakes are so high for Americans, regardless of where they sit on the ideological fence, that nobody wants a spoiler election. And I think the way we are set up with our 270 electoral vote system, a third party candidacy is all but impossible to launch. So I think it's even harder now, actually, for even the most charismatic third party contender to get out there and just be able to say at most, hey, I can stop the guy you hate most from getting over the finish line. I don't think that's what people want right now. I think they want more certainty than that.
The era of negative polarization. I think that's the I buy the argument. No Label says that, hey, a vast majority are here ideologically. Yes, but all those people believe we're a two party system, and you have to pick one. Are you a Succession junkie enough that you have to watch it on Sunday nights?
I do not. Actually, my husband watches it more than I do, and I just sort of keep up to be able to understand the references that he makes. So
What are you into right now?
I'm Ted Lasso. I'm a Ted Lasso person. It's been pretty good this season, and it's a good reprieve from all the stuff that we talk about every day.
You know, I have a small nit that I'd pick with Ted Lasso this year is it wasn't as happy of a season, although it was nice to get that happiness back this last episode.
Yeah, you know, he had to go through his struggles. But one of my big beefs is that every time I watch it, it's like, isn't this episode really long? Like, the episodes are getting, like, longer and longer as the series goes on.
But they have. This is not like, It's not an illusion. I agree with you. They're all, almost all an hour now.
I know. And it's like, I love that it was used to be these, this little like half hour little bite of something and you could, you know, just get it in before you go to bed or something. But yeah, I have a feeling that it's, I don't know how far you are along. I feel like it's on a trajectory heading back to a better spot.
Are they ending it? This is it, right?
Yeah. So I hope that it goes out with on a more positive note than it kind of descended into. I will agree with you.
Are we going to have Ted Lasso and the owner hook up or not? Like, I'm just like, I at this point, I'm rooting for it.
That would be too neat of a bow.
Is that too, I know we don't do that anymore, but
right.
At this point, this is supposed to be the happy show. So why not?
Yeah, why not? The possibilities are endless.
Well, I hope it leads to other shows that attempt to like, hey, we can look on the bright side.
Yeah.
You can be interesting. You can be sophisticated and you can look on the bright side.
Yes.
Not dystopia doesn't have to always be at the center of every smart television show.
I think that that's absolutely true. Like I was saying to my husband, Ted Lasso is the anti-Succession. Like,
yeah.
Everybody's awful on Succession and on Ted Lasso, at least in some way, everybody's trying to be a better person.
Everybody's redeemable or on the verge of being redeemed.
Exactly.
Yeah. No. It's fascinating. Kimberly. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Chuck. Good to talk to you.